This year's donations might go to, say, the geology department.
Oh dear, not the dirt people.
Geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really.
What kind of activity is thermolytic acid?
Look, I'm just a geologist. I like rocks. I love rocks.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Geology Flannel Cast. My name is Steve.
Hey, I'm Chris.
And I am Jesse with energy.
I like it.
Good.
It's good. Yes, good.
Jesse with energy.
Thank you. Yeah, that was good. That was tight.
That was, yeah. I'm Steve running on fumes.
No, I'm exhausted.
We always strive to be, you know, high octane here at the Flannel Cast.
Yeah, man.
Jesse's just, you know, I don't know what he's doing over there. But
it's always good to start the episode by saying I'm on fumes and I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You get what you get and you don't throw a fit, right?
Yeah.
That's not how it goes.
No, you get what you get and you don't get upset.
You don't get upset. All right.
I'm a poet and I didn't even realize it.
That's it.
Can we address this real quick? Is that a skateboard in the background?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, just checking.
Have you seen the video of the guy on the skateboard drinking the cranberry juice, singing, what is it, Dreams by Fleetwood Mac?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's an incredible video, and I want you to recreate it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll find a link for it.
That's awesome.
No, it's like it's an old retro skateboard.
Yeah, it's right. It almost looks like plastic or something.
It is plastic, yeah.
So we have I do have a pretty sweet yellow plastic skateboard from the 70s. But it cannot bear my weight.
You actually bought it in the 70s?
Yes. Yes, I got it for my first birthday.
All right, let's get started off by paying the bills here before we get too into this.
Formatting Formula, still our number one sponsor. We're still looking for our number two sponsor if anybody's out there listening and wants to get your name out there for 800 downloads per episode. Just saying. But we love you, Formatting Formula. Just
most awkward commercial ever. Continues. Can you make it any more awkward?
So, for all of your word formatting needs, please go to formattingformula.com. Let them know the Geology Flannel Cast sent you. They can help you out with any of your formatting needs, anything from table of contents or embedding pictures or I don't know, page numbers, weird, funky setting up forms, like documents for people to fill out all the time, form things. They can even change the header thing at the top. I didn't even know you could customize that. You can customize that for anything that you need. And Formatting Formula can do it for you, or Formatting Formula is so lovely that they have their own YouTube videos where they can teach you how to do it. So check them out on YouTube, youtube.com/C/formatting formula. Again, leave a little comment, you know, like them, subscribe to them, let them know the Geology Flannel Cast sent you. And yeah, I can't say enough good things about them. Thank you, Formatting Formula.
All right. So we got another current events episode today. Actually, we have a fair amount of stories lined up today. I don't even know if we'll get to all of them within this action-packed hour to hour and a half that we released.
Yes, I agree.
Which
I'm also in agreement.
Very good. That's which one do you guys want to start off with?
All right. Since I almost never bring anything to the table, do you mind if I start?
Yes.
Sure. I'm just going to.
Yes. Yes. You mind or yes, I can start.
Yes, I mind. What do you think you're doing here? Go ahead.
All right. So scientists find intact brain cells in skull of a man killed in the Vesuvius eruption in 79 AD.
Whoa. I wasn't expecting that.
I didn't see that coming.
I was like, where's he going with this?
Neither did the people of Vesuvius or Pompeii, I guess.
Yeah. Herculaneum, I think is where he lived, which is...
Oh, I blew it.
Yeah.
The town Sorry. Over. The other Sorry. Side of the track.
So these experts were studying the remains. You know, these remains were first discovered in like the 60s. And a victim who was lying face down on a wooden bed in a building thought to have been like a temple to the emperor. The anthropologists noticed that there was something shiny in the skull. this was in 2018. So you're talking like 50 years later, they noticed that something shiny was shiny inside the skull.
Huh.
And basically, you know, we kind of know what happens when you heat something up really fast and cool it down. It essentially becomes glass. It doesn't have time to cool down and the molecules align themselves, you know, like a rock or something like that. So the brain was exposed to this hot volcanic ash initially and heated up. And I think it was, I forget the number, 932 degrees Fahrenheit after Ooh. The eruption.
Ooh.
But then
roasty toasty.
So this is the hot ash initially, but then the hot ash actually cooled it down, like, or not the hot ash, the continual ash fall ended up cooling it down. So the brain essentially got super hot, but then cooled down really fast. So it became almost like volcanic glass. So they took this glassy stuff from inside this guy's skull and it actually put it under a scanning electron microscope and they could see preserved brain cells.
What?
In this vitrified brain tissue.
Wow.
So like that's ridiculous.
This is like this has a sci-fi movie written all over it. They're gonna download his thoughts and relive the last moments of the
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, have you seen, so I think it is actually in Herculaneum as well. They find where the old harbor used to be, these buildings where they find, you know, dozens of skeletons, people like huddling, trying to escape because they were evacuating by sea. And one of the ways they sort of pieced together that it was a pyroclastic flow that caused most of the people to die and not, say, just like heavy ash. So that Vesuvius and Herculaneum get buried by 15, 20 feet of ash and get entombed, and that's why they're sort of famous. Mm-hmm. And so one of the questions, well, was it just a lot of ash? Was it a lahar? And in this harbor, I don't know, building, they find by looking at the skulls, they're all like cracked and whatever. And they can actually tell from the fracture patterns that they cracked outwards.
Yeah, so
they basically superheated and exploded.
Yeah.
Wow.
The people died instantly, so.
Yeah. So they're actually they're obviously just like any research, you're going to research it some more. And they're figuring out how to they're going to analyze the proteins from the remains to try to get their related genes, which is crazy. And they're also going to try to analyze exact, like, you know, they have like 500 degrees C. That's a ballpark number based on all the stuff that happened, but they're going to get the exact temperatures based on some of these proteins and like the cooling rates, and you know, it's they're really going to get a lot from this. But and we'll obviously, just like we always do, we'll post a link on our website, but you can see it. It's there's the scanning electron image, you know, it's maybe, I don't know, maybe 30 microns across, but you can see it. It's definitely a structure there. It's really pretty crazy.
Wow. You know, while you're talking about that, I was reading about the eruption of Vesuvius, and they basically, it's pretty interesting. They got this thing pretty well documented based on, well, obviously the archaeological excavations, and there's two letters that they have. So it's the two letters of Pliny to the Roman historian.
Yeah, Pliny.
Tacitus, yes.
Anyways, which Pliny was it, the elder or the younger?
I forget. I always get confused too. But Pliny, yeah. Wasn't he across the sea there, like documenting it as it was happening?
I don't know. But they,
Pliny. I always say Pliny, but you say Pliny.
I thought it was Pliny. There's a famous beer, Pliny the Younger.
Yeah. So the elder died in Vesuvius, trying to rescue his friends. And so his son, the younger, I guess it was actually his nephew that he adopted.
Oh.
But he wrote about it. But about 25 years, he sent it to Tacitus, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm. I might have another kid just so I can call him Steve the Younger.
that's a heck of a commitment right there. Just
like not Junior, just the Younger.
Why don't you just get a dog? It's a lot easier and cheaper. That'd be great, right? if you got a dog named Steve the Younger.
My wife would love for us to have a dog. So if it ever happens again, I'll make that a caveat. Like, yeah, we can get one, but this has to be the name.
So they got this eruption. So you said it earlier, but the eruption of Vesuvius happened in 79 AD. And they got it nailed down. They said at around 1 p.m., this thing went off, started spewing volcanic material out. And I'm looking at the this website. It's giving like the kind of play-by-play of the volcanic eruption. Pretty neat.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead, Justin. Sorry.
I was going to say, one of the things they think, like, before the preceding the pyroclastic, there were successive pyroclastic flows.
Yeah. Six of them, I think.
Yeah.
Six, yeah.
And, like, the one was basically just, like, sulfuric acid and hydrofluoric acid, like, just nasty stuff.
Nice.
Suffocated a lot of the people, and that was that's what they think, you know, one of the things that the reason you find all of these people just
sort of laying down.
Yeah, in situ, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's terrible, but I'm sure. So I think we've even talked about this before. Like, you see all those people dead, and you're like, "Oh my God, man, that's terrible." But then you see like dogs, and you're like, "Oh man, a dog died!" Like, I feel worse than people's pets died. But yeah, yes,
it is. It's like, and it's famous because. So it wasn't rediscovered until the 19th century. Some archaeologists found Vesuvius and Herculaneum, and they realized that in the ash were these cavities where the bodies were, and so they poured in plaster. And so you're looking at a cast of these people in their final moments. And there's something morbid.
Or is it a mold?
Yeah, I always get those two confused.
I always get them. I even had to teach that lab several times, and I always get them backwards. Too. Yeah,
I've taught paleontology and stratigraphy like six times in my life.
Right? You always have to reread it right before you teach it. Yep.
And I always describe it. I'm always like, imagine you have a garbage can, and if you pour cement into the garbage can and then remove the garbage can, that's a mold cast.
That's a mold.
If you pour it around the side of the garbage can and it gives an impression, it's something like a mold is what the organism, a mold is 3D. It's what the organism looked like. I can't.
Yeah. Anyway, but they're saying it's still that Vesuvius is still active.
Oh, super active.
And it's considered like the most dangerous volcano on the planet because there's like 3 million people in its wake, like Naples, Italy, is right there.
And one of the main evacuation methods for Naples is basically by sea. So it's in 2,000 years, nothing
has changed. No.
Talking about learning from your mistakes.
Exactly. But I guess there's a tiny bit, maybe more information of a precursor. Like we can now monitor like gas emissions or earthquakes and bulges and things like that a little more, but we haven't learned in 2000 years.
The last major eruption was 1944. It was during World War II.
I was going to say, man, they're already having a crappy time of it.
can't catch a break.
Can't catch a break is right. So anyway, I just thought that was really cool. And since I never bring anything to the table.
No, that was awesome.
One other little fun fact about that I was just reading just now about Vesuvius. They think that eruption, they figured it was around like October 17th of the year 79.
And so is that which calendar though? Is that Gregorian or is that the Julian calendar? It's probably Julian. Gregorian doesn't come around until.
Yeah, until like 700.
Gregory the Great, right? I don't know.
Yeah. We'll get some emails.
I don't know what calendar they're using for that, but
either way, but how cool is that? 2,000 years ago, it was this day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, right. Like, well, so they found these bodies. There's several lines of evidence.
Was somebody wearing a watch or something?
The Timex, right? It was,
just stopped
the sun,
dead.
The sundial watch they had back then. So the people that were buried in ash were wearing heavier clothing, so they figured it wasn't the summertime. There was fresh fruits and vegetables in the shops that were typical of October. What else? Oh, and they had wine fermenting in wine fermenting in jars had been sealed, which happens around the end of October. And then they also found coins in the purse of a woman who was buried in the ash. And basically, to make a long story short, they only made these coins after in the second week of September. So they had all this evidence, and they kind of figured out when that eruption.
Cool. So what date did you say?
17th.
On or after October 17th.
So that would be October 30th for us. Ooh, Halloween, spooky volcano.
Whoa.
Because the Julian calendar is 13 days behind the Gregorian calendar.
Unless the article I'm reading already calibrated for that.
I need to
curveball. Oh, whatever, it's October, get over it.
I want it to be a Halloween volcano.
Yeah, hey, we're in October now, so
candy
cane. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah,
that's
really like, it's stuff like that when you're like, that's really cool that they could pinpoint based on coins and wine and
Yeah.
So this is
crystallized brain matter,
right? Like, so archaeology, like, it's like the baby brother of geology.
Yeah.
It's like right now. I guess we're recording this on October 5th. This is roughly the 1,941st anniversary of Vesuvius going off. Big one.
Let's take a moment.
Pour one out for your homies.
Yeah. How about Pliny going to try to save his homies? Sweet. He died.
Yeah.
It took his son or his adopted nephew 25 years to put pen to paper. Couldn't even bring himself to do it. So it was intense.
Yeah. Some maybe too soon.
Yeah. All right. So that's what I got.
That's
who's
it?
Next? No, I got more, but
I don't want to step on any toes. No, let me just tell my story and then I'm going to hit mute and take a nap.
Oh, all right. Sounds good. Same thing you do every week? Is that what you're
That's why you hear me talk.
Yeah.
That was the whole purpose of Jesse's Corner. I want to get my early.
Jesse's Corner.
Turn off my microphone.
Yep.
Take a little nap. So I've got one story here that builds on some of the stuff we talked about when we talked about the Drake equation and a life We talked about habitability and the Goldilocks zone or the habitability zone. There was a recent study out by some researchers at Washington State University in Washington State. This is a side story. There's a grad student at Temple who just finished in the summer, but he's from Oregon. But every time we talk about the Pacific Northwest, we're always like, oh, I think that's in Washington State, because it's just something we instinctively, I think, say in on the East Coast to mm-hmm. distinguish it from Washington, D.C.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And he's like, I come out East, and I've never heard anyone refer to it as Washington State until I came out East.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I never realized that. But yeah, he's like, there's no other state you talk about by adding state to the end of it. I was like, yeah, yeah, well, maybe they should.
Not New York State.
Yeah. I'll give you that one, Seminac. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? No, we do live 90 miles from the District of Columbia.
True.
And everybody around, if you were to say Washington, nobody's thinking Washington State.
Yeah, you're not thinking like Seattle or anything like that.
No, you're thinking Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, this study was looking to sort of get beyond the idea about life, you know, life as we think about it on Earth. And instead of looking for like Earth's twin, it was thinking about the ideas of what makes a planet habitable. And so what they found, or what they're positing, I should say, is that conditions would need to be a little bit different than you find on Earth. The planet should be a little bit older, a little bit bigger, a little bit warmer, and that would make it a little bit wetter. And you would see more habitability in that sense. And so instead of looking for like sun-like planets, which are what we would call G-type stars, they're thinking. Because the problem with G stars, OG stars, can we call them? is that they're short lived, and so like our sun has a life, or G type stars have lifetimes anywhere from 8 to 10 billion years, and if it takes 4 billion years for life as we know it, you know, intelligent life to arise on Earth, that your window is not great there. And mm-hmm. so if you can extend your timeline out a little bit, the probability that life develop goes way up. And so K-type stars, which are a little smaller, so they're a little cooler, so a little less luminous. Mm-hmm. So that means the planet has to be a little bit closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they last anywhere from 20 to 70 billion years.
Wow.
So that gives a lot more time. But the problem is, even if you had the star lasting that long, you know, think about Earth, our core is cooling. And so if you lose your geothermal heat, if your planet cools off, then plate tectonics stops.
Mm-hmm.
Plate tectonics stops, life ceases to exist, because then their atmosphere basically, it stops getting recycled. It's a whole thing.
I guess I have a question about the with plate tectonics. I get that, but it's the dynamo that keeps the radiation off the planet. So Are we just assuming that all planets are going to have this sort of like mantle, outer core, inner core differentiation?
I think that's one of the grand questions.
Okay.
What you would need. But their loophole sort of around this is that if the planet is slightly bigger, 10% larger than Earth, it's going to have more habitable land. It's going to be a little bit more massive, so it's going to retain that heat longer, which means it's going to have a stronger gravity, so it'll retain its atmosphere longer.
So they're assuming that you have to wait. Let me ask you. I don't know if they answered this or if you read this or not, but they're assuming that the life has to be on land.
No. Well, no, I think you're thinking about like intelligent life.
Yeah. And I think they're at least the article I read, they're kind of proposing this as like where people would go to repopulate.
Yeah.
So as opposed to where, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So if we had to abandon ship or whatever.
Yeah.
So another question, because I just don't know anything about this, like if you find like life on another planet or whatever, but what's the is there a definition of intelligent life?
Well, it depends on who you ask, I think.
Yeah.
But no, there's one of, so Drake.
Like, if we find like a planet of like dolphins, like,
yeah,
would they say that's Earth, you know, something?
Well, this is sort of interesting. You get into a lot of sort of interesting questions here, because one of the things when you think about intelligent life and you think about, are you considering humans the only intelligent civilization? Mm-hmm. You know, some would argue no, Neanderthals were just as human as human. That's why we have overlapping DNA.
Yeah.
And they made art, and they, you know, it just happens they sort of faded off.
Yeah. White zombie, more human than a human.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's part of Drake's equation. His two variables are, it becomes intelligent. That's one. And then it needs the ability to communicate into space. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to read. I feel like your overlap with, I don't know, philosophy becomes really great when you try and define what is intelligence.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to venture into that.
No.
Not on this podcast. Not while we're recording each other, at least.
No. We talk about that a lot in our Sasquatch podcast.
Yeah.
So.
Get ready.
Yeah.
So one of the other sort of thing here, and I'll just, this will be the last thing I say about this, is if it's the planet's slightly bigger and it's slightly warmer, it's going to have, even if its mean surface temperature is like 5 degrees Celsius warmer, it'll have say more moisture in the air, which will allow say it to be wetter, sort of. Mm-hmm. Tropical rainforest-esque, where you're going to have greater biodiversity. You have greater biodiversity, there's a greater chance, you know, you diversify life, there's a greater chance that you get past that great filter where you start evolving into intelligent civilizations. You know, this complex life has a greater chance if you give it more chances.
Life finds a way.
There we are.
It's been like 8 weeks in a row we've quoted Jurassic Park.
So there's 24 candidates that they found. The closest one is a mere 100 light years away.
Ah,
so
better start working on that one then.
Yeah, hop on the rocket now.
Yeah, yeah. That's still 100 light years away is really far. You wouldn't need like.
So yeah. I can give you conventional rockets. The fastest man-made object is the Juno space probe that's out by Jupiter now, and it hit speeds, I want to say, of 150,000 miles an hour.
That's it.
And the closest Earth-like planet to us is Tau Ceti. It's in the Tau Ceti system, which is, I want to say, 4 light years away.
All right.
Going that speed, it would still take like 40,000 years to get there.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. But the interesting thing is, so you said that there was a planet that was 100 light years away. It was
one of these super habitable planets.
So the radio signals that we started releasing or giving off, it's getting pretty close to there, you know?
We're about to hear a lot of, I don't know, Hitler's broadcasts and
lots of I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
But then it would take 100 years for them to send a signal back.
We'll say no thanks.
Yeah.
Assuming they do send something, if there is, you know, if they are picking up
Yeah, they'll hear stuff. It and they'll just be like, no, don't. Just pretend like they'll like turn off the lights, pretend like they're not home.
Yep. Yeah.
Assuming also they know how to speak any of the languages on Earth as well. So
you're a lot less optimistic than I am.
Yeah, man.
Well, it would just sound like I don't know, like you hear like birds chirping, but you don't really know what they're saying.
I talk to the birds in my backyard all the time.
It sounds like you need to get out more. Like, All right. Next story. You want me to go?
Sure.
All right. I got two stories here. All right. I got, what do you guys want to talk about? Venus or Mars? I got two kind of planetary. We've been dealing with these planetary topics a lot over the last couple of weeks, but, I don't know. Pick a planet. Which one did you guys want to hear about?
I have a couple from Venus. So if you want to, you can go Venus heavy or you can diversify. I'll leave it up to you, buddy.
All right, let's go with Venus.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. All right. Venus is in the news right now. It's like the sexy topic to talk about, you know?
Yep. But if you stole one of my articles, then I'm going to hit mute and take a nap like Jesse.
You've been hitting mute for the last 5 weeks.
That's like four, but carry on.
All right. So this article talks about Venus might be habitable today if it was not for Jupiter. So Jupiter, this is kind of a short one. It's not going to take me too long to go into this, but it seemed like Jupiter might have altered the orbit of Venus. All right. So first we need to talk about how big Jupiter is. If you combine all of the planets in our solar system, Jupiter's mass is 2.5 times that. All right. Jupiter is pretty big. I think we're all in agreement to that.
Jupiter's like not far off from almost becoming a star, right?
No, it's still much smaller than the sun.
No, I know it's much smaller than the sun, but I forget what it's like 10 times the size of Jupiter, it would have enough mass to start. Anyway,
that's interesting. I don't know. I don't know what the critical mass is for nuclear fusion.
I would actually. So one thing, that's really interesting. One thing that I just saw yesterday that I was sort of blown away by. So Earth is the densest of all the planets.
Is it really?
Average density of like 5.5. Jupiter's density is 1.3.
What?
Water is 1 for reference. Saturn, the only planet under 1. Saturn is less dense than water. If you put
It would float in a bathtub.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you say Jupiter was again?
1.3.
So Jupiter would still sink. Wow. I thought that all the gas giants would float in water.
No, what the heck is Saturn made of? Just nothing?
Hydrogen and helium.
Yeah, some liquid nitrogen.
All the gas giants are mostly hydrogen and helium.
Yeah. Don't they think Jupiter has a small core?
They don't know.
I mean, you could say anything. I'll say it. Prove me wrong. It's probably got a core of that super ice.
Ice 19 or whatever?
Yeah, whatever we're talking about.
Yeah.
Black ice. Not that we deal with in Pennsylvania in the wintertime.
Yeah, no.
Black ice.
That's much more deadly.
That is. Take your car right off the road.
Yep.
If you live anywhere where it doesn't get cold, black ice is just ice on the road that you can't see.
Yeah. It happened to me. I was probably like 18 or 19 at the time. And I was driving down a road. And I was driving stick shift, and you can almost instantly tell when you're driving stick shift because, you know, your revs just really start going up, and my car just started spinning. Like, and I had a friend in the car, and I was like, don't freak out. I got this. And like literally spun around the road twice and then finally got past the ice and like kept on going. I felt like I was in Days of Thunder. I was like, yes, I just pulled this out of it. Like, I'm so excited.
I have a opposite story. I was the passenger and we were coming down a hill. We're coming from Pittsburgh and we hit a patch and we started spinning. and we came to a stop like perpendicular across the road, and my friend who was driving looked at me and goes, "Whoa, that was awesome." And I was like, "Drive the car, ribbon."
Wait, were you my passenger?
Yeah. You are, yeah. Ours was like a more like a buddy comedy.
So, all right. So back to Jupiter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry. The core.
Buddy comedies, Jupiter and Venus, these two guys.
Yeah, really.
All right, the shenanigans that were going on with these two planets. All right, so there's so Jupiter has been kind of changing its orbit around the sun. And during its formation, it moved closer to the sun, and then it moved further away from the sun. And this like movement of Jupiter seems to have really affected Venus. And so, you know, we're looking, Venus doesn't have any liquid water that we know of. And they figure that Venus hasn't had any liquid water for about nearly a billion years or so. But now part of the study was the orbit of Venus was analyzed. And Venus has the most circular orbit of all of the planets. Huh. And so, yeah. So what they did for the study was they put it on a scale from 0 to 1. So 0 being like a perfect circle and 1, which is, they just say it's not circular at all. All right. So it's on a scale from 0 to 1. And Venus, they gave it, it measures at 0.006. It's like I said, the most circular planet in our solar system. But they think that
measurement's called eccentricity, right?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So they think that when Jupiter was closer to the sun about a billion years ago, Venus had an eccentricity of 0.3. And so when it and then when Jupiter moved, Venus went through this like dramatic change in its climate, heated up, and it lost the water in its atmosphere. Hmm. And so now the question, you know, like I said, Venus has been in the news a lot over the last, when did that news story break? About a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that, about the phosphine in Jupiter, or not Jupiter, Venus's atmosphere.
Time has no meaning anymore.
Yeah. But yeah, it was
yesterday, yes. 3 weeks ago.
I want to say less than a month.
Yeah.
So now the question is, and it's a fun, just kind of like a fun hypothesis thought experiment, right? But we got this phosphine in the Venetian atmosphere. And if you missed the flannel cast, we talked about this news story. Phosphine is a biomarker. It's from microbial activity, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It was exactly 3 weeks ago.
Okay, perfect. It was exactly 3 weeks ago. So the question, the fun thought experiment is, all right, so before Jupiter started, you know, moving around, going back and forth, which coincidentally, for a side story, it seems like it's that is more of a common occurrence for these gas giants to move closer and further away from the sun than we originally thought. So that's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how the Earth got that late heavy bombardment, right?
Oh. Huh.
That was about a billion years ago when Jupiter was doing its Jupiter dance.
The late heaven bombardment was a billion years into it. It was 3.8 billion.
Yeah.
But they think it was when one of the gas giants was moving out.
Dancing.
Yeah.
So Venus has a runaway greenhouse, right? Its atmosphere is mostly CO2.
Yeah, it's less than 50 years.
How did Jupiter cause
the runaway? So it seems like...
Riddle me that.
I mean, I don't. The article didn't really get into the details.
Yeah.
But it says,
blaming Jupiter.
As Jupiter migrated, Venus would have gone through these dramatic changes in climate, heating up, then cooling off, and increasingly losing its water into the atmosphere.
I guess if you don't have any eccentricity, you always have the same climate. I guess you know what I mean. Like, there's no. I guess it also depends on the wobble of the planet too. The tilt.
Yeah, it depends on the tilt. The tilt gives you seasonality.
But But how close or far you are from the sun also has an impact on your cycles. You know, your Milankovitch cycles, but I guess Venus is not a Milankovitch cycle, but yeah.
Yeah, if you have no eccentricity, it's going to be even solar radiation the entire year instead of when you're at your aphelion versus your other one, perihelion.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, so there's no point where like the water could catch up,
cool off
a little bit. It's just constantly being, you know, you're in a microwave on that rotisserie plate. It's just constantly spinning around.
So here's the link to that's going to segue into our next story that Steve has.
Oh.
Ready for this? All right. So, but talk about that phosphine that was found in the Venetian atmosphere, right? So the fun thought.
Vesuvian atmosphere. It's not from Venice.
Oh, did I? Oh, I screwed that up. Did I?
Vesuvian would be Venus.
Thank you. Oh, all right.
Angry letters from
You know how you make a Venetian blind?
I just say the atmosphere of Venus.
Yeah.
So now, question: Did that phosphine, is that from microbes that are still hanging out in the atmosphere of Venus for the last billion years from when it was potentially habitable, or is there another source for that phosphine that was discovered on Venus?
I'm going to pick up right there where you left off, buddy. Appreciate the little segue. Yeah. So traces of phosphine gas recently discovered, and everybody's all a tizzy, right? But this notion was developed. So there's a hypothesis out there that asteroids actually basically skimming off the surface of Earth are picking up microbes and then dispersing it throughout the universe. So Harvard researchers theorize that the biosignature gas from Venus, this phosphine, came from meteorites that grazed our planet's atmosphere and then crashed into the distant planet, which sounds a little bit like hubris, like, oh, well, there can't be any life unless it came from us. But at the same time, you know, these people did their research. So in 2017, a meteor grazed the Earth's atmosphere over Australia for 90 seconds and then headed back on its journey, right? Like kind of streaked across the sky.
Minute and a half.
Didn't burn up like a normal meteor. Just kind of came in, heated up, skipped off the surface, and kept going. And the team, this Harvard research team, believes that the meteor could have collected up to 10,000 microbial colonies from our world and carried it to another. So over the last 3.7 billion years, they've calculated that 600,000 space rocks have dipped into the Earth's atmosphere and then collided with Venus. Now, 3.7 billion years is a long time, but 600,000 space rocks have actually taken that trajectory that skimmed through our atmosphere and then kept going and then hit a planet that's also moving at, you know, however a million miles an hour around the sun. So this is
what are the chances?
I mean, I guess if you divide 600,000 into 3.7 billion years, it's a teeny tiny number, which makes sense because you would think that would be a teeny tiny number for somebody like, that's like saying somebody, here's a rock, skip it across this pond. And then, you know, you have to skip it across this pond and then you have to land it inside a milk jug on the other side of the pond. And it has to pick up 10,000 microbes while it does that and then land in that milk jug. You know what I mean?
But I mean, also the milk jug has gravitational pull too, to a little bit.
Okay.
Once that trajectory kind of goes towards it, you know,
let's call it a 5 gallon Home Depot bucket. But either way, it's still, I guess 600,000 into 3.7 billion. It's more than a one in a million chance, but, obviously they did their math. I didn't check it,
Run the numbers,
yeah, my calculator ran out of battery. Sorry. So, but like the one that the meteorite that skimmed the Earth's surface was going 35,000 miles per hour before it ran into space, like basically hit us and then bounced back off into space.
It's really interesting that the angles of our orbit with the orbit of whatever object have to be just right for the gravity of the Earth to pull that object onto Earth. So it's actually a tiny window that's called the keyhole, which is
the keyhole.
And so that's why you can get objects that can actually pass right through the atmosphere without, or skip off the atmosphere without, you know, you think once it hits the atmosphere, it'll slow down and just crash into Earth. But it's kind of crazy. You can have these things speed on by. Seems very unneighborly, just to like dine and dash through the atmosphere, if you will.
So right now, this is just a hypothesis. They have no way to know if the phosphine gas actually came from Earth, this obviously was a hypothesis before the phosphine gas was detected, and now it's coming back to light. You know, they proposed this 3 years ago, and now it's like,
maybe.
Yeah.
Be interesting. Did they think about like the microbes in sort of, you know, space surviving through the, you know, the
I'm thinking more of the 35,000 miles an hour through our atmosphere and it screaming hot.
Yeah, I guess there's that.
Yeah.
And then getting really cold, you know, it's like a glassy brain all over again.
Exactly. But I guess if they're able to pull out proteins out of a glassy brain from 2,000 years ago, maybe life finds a way.
We just changed the name of the podcast.
Might be it. That may have been the last one.
Yeah. I think, whatever. Jeff Goldblum's going to send a cease and desist order to the podcast and keep it up.
Hey, listen, I would be super stoked if that happened. That means, if not Jeff Goldblum, at least somebody who knows Jeff Goldblum is listening to us.
Or, you know, Spielberg, what, DreamWorks? Is that who did the Jurassic Park?
I think it was Spielberg, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a DreamWorks movie or whatever. Anyways,
that's not DreamWorks. Spielberg's
DreamWorks.
Amblin.
Oh, Amblin. Oh, yeah.
It's the one that looks like Amblin? E.T. Yeah.
Oh.
Amblin Entertainment.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. I'm not really that in the movies.
I watch way too much TV. So.
All right. We got time for like another news story or so? Yeah. Anyone got another one?
Intact Brain. I have one that's, you know, it's just a heartwarming story. It has not much to do with geology.
Let me tell my depressing one first.
Oh, all right. Yes. Do it. Bring it down.
It's just way too happy of a podcast. We're talking about life, you know, coming about and
finding a way.
Jesse's just going to, here we go.
This is real time and occurring right now. And it's natural disaster related. So it's surface of the earth.
All right.
So wildfires. Are you familiar?
I am.
I've heard of them.
Gripping country. So one thing that they're starting to see, and they noticed this after the big campfire in 2017,
2018. It was 2018, I think it was.
2018 that destroyed the town of Paradise.
Yeah.
And they're seeing it now is that as these wildfires burn sort of populated areas and start burning, say communities, one unintended consequence that they're seeing a lot of times in the aftermath is that the water in the area is highly polluted. And you're starting to see a lot of toxins and heavy metals. You know, you just from a very basic level, you can think about like cars burning up and you have all of these sort of metals that make up your car. And you think about your catalytic converter and things like that. a lot of them melt. You could probably see pictures.
Oh, I see where you're going. Okay.
The aluminum rims that melt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to, like all the PAHs, all the PCBs, all the
so one
hydrocarbons, thing all that stuff. Is
volatile organic compounds, these VOCs, and benzene is the big one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not good for
and so
life.
Benzene, they're saying in benzene after the Tubbs fire, which was in California.
This year?
I thought Tubbs was last year.
Last year, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
They were picking up benzene. So benzene in the water.
Benzene's not good in your water. I'd say
no. Benzene. I mean, most you want have a benzene of like
less than one part per billion.
Yeah. So benzene. One part per billion over the long term is dangerous.
Yeah.
26 parts per billion in the short term is dangerous.
Okay.
They were detecting levels of 40,000 parts per billion.
Woo.
And you know, to put that in perspective, that's like a gas station leaking. Like, I deal with this a lot in my day to day. So yes, it is bad. It is terrible. But like, that's all it would take is to like one gas station in a wildfire to catch on fire and explode and then leak all their gasoline. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all it would take.
So one of the crazy things, and like in this part of California too, they have a lot of the water pipes are plastics. Mm-hmm. Even like the main water mains are high density polyethylene pipes.
HDPE.
That are melting. And so like the pipes break. So not only are you just getting these plastics and things, when a pipe breaks, you know, if you ever see pictures of like water mains breaking and you just see water pouring out, I don't know if you've ever asked yourself, like, why don't they just shut off the water to fix it? Well, they don't shut off the water because it would create a back pressure, it would create a vacuum. It would pull contaminants in, it would pull like mud. So they keep the water flowing to just keep flushing the pipe.
Oh.
So
I've always wondered that. I just
So in these wildfires, these pipes are breaking, and basically, especially if the fire departments are using hydrants, it's creating pressure. So it's pulling in, not only, you know, are you melting all these contaminants, but it's also pulling in contaminants that are in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting into the water. And so one of the things they're seeing is that you have a lot of these VOCs. Benzene is one, but naphthalene and methylene chloride that have really low boiling points. And so like people get a shower and you just have these vapors coming out of the water.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so they're basically telling people to like, if you're going to shower, like they haven't given any, they've given don't drink, don't boil advisories. Like not solve it. It will actually make it worse, but they're not giving any don't use orders, but they're basically saying like, if you're going to shower very short and do it in a ventilated area.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
But basically try and find alternative waters to use.
Wow.
And so it's kind of crazy because they have, you know, it's not just in the drinking water, but it's when the water comes out, you get these VOCs degassing out of it that are causing
it. And how hot are these fires that it's melting a pipe underground? Like, I understand it's plastic, so it has a low melting point compared to like copper or something, but that's
so some of these, I don't know if it melted any underground. I do know the ones that melted ran above because it's in these mountainous regions, so they just
I was gonna say, because I think because soil is a very good insulator, and if I'm correct, I don't think that you only needed a couple inches of soil to the heat from the fire doesn't really penetrate that far down. It only penetrates like an inch or two or something like that.
That's why us mammals are here. Am I right?
Yeah.
Talk to Chicxulub.
If you do have a lot of organic matter in your topsoil, you can get smolder that goes through that O horizon.
I did not know that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's almost like a really weak peat or something.
Yeah, exactly. You can smolder your way through.
Weak Pete, that was my nickname in high school.
Weak Pete. Smoldering Pete.
Smoldering Pete would have been better than Weak Pete.
So just one of these things, like you kind of consider, like we talk, especially with these fires going on, we talked a lot about the air quality hazards involved and how it's obviously a problem burning all of these forests down. But there's this longer term, you know, impact on, say, groundwater quality and the human health impact.
Yeah. It's something ridiculous. It's like a tablespoon of gasoline can contaminate 10,000 gallons of water to the point where it's above standard.
Wow.
Yeah. So like next time you're filling up your lawnmower and you spill a little bit, just think about that.
So the solution to pollution is not dilution? Is that what you're
doing? No, you just got to really dilute it. That's all.
Get the garden hose and run it in reverse. Suck it into the groundwater, right?
No. Anyway. That's kind of depressing, you know. Yep, your
long-term impact here.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness. I just survived this wildfire. Oh, now I may be dying from my shower. So all right. So I'm just going to bring you up just a little bit. This is that, you know, I'm like Jesse said, you know, Jesse's challenge, throw anything at him and he can figure out how to relate it to geology. So I was reading this article and my wife actually brought this article up to me today. Tasmanian devils are being reintroduced to Australia after 3,000 years. So Tasmanian devils became extinct. I thought they were extinct forever. You know, this is how much I know about biology. But no, there were still some on Tasmania, hence the name.
They're having a real big problem with cancer with the
Tasmanian. Yes, they have some sort of nose cancer or something.
Yeah, these growths. Yeah, it was really gnarly stuff.
They have these Tasmanian devils, and then it's funny. I was talking to my wife. She's like, "Oh, you know, what about this interesting story about Tasmanian devils?" I was like, "Yeah, there's this foundation that's taking Tasmanian devils and reintroduce them in the Australian outback, and they're hoping that that's going to rebalance wildlife, especially after, you know, again, we're still in 2020, but in the beginning of 2020, basically all of Australia burned." Mm-hmm. And so I'm reading this article and talking about how they've introduced, I think they introduced like 11 or 12 earlier this year. And now they're reintroducing like 26 more. And I read this whole article and talking about, and you know, they like dingoes were introduced to Australia, which I didn't understand. I thought dingoes were Australian. Like, just
where did the dingo come from?
Exactly. So many things were just blowing my mind with this article. And then of course, so I'm talking to my wife about it and she's like, "Yeah, it's Chris Hemsworth." I'm like, "Who?" Like, "Thor?" She's like, "Yeah, Thor. Like, it's he's helping out this foundation." So I'm reading this whole article and never once did it dawn on me that it's this famous actor who is helping footing the bill. And then like I reread the article right before we came on. Yeah, and there's a picture of Thor like on one of these like containers holding Tasmanian devils. And I was like, "Oh yeah, look at that. That is Thor."
I mean, it's sort of smart. From like, if you're thinking about it from like an ecological point of view, if you're creating these connections that were there originally or sort of naturally.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, talk about a
huge recovery period.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to reintroduce them now is probably the best time to ever reintroduce them. So
I want to say they, those fires in that area like devastated like 80% of the koala population.
It was something like a billion animals died or something. So jeez. Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yes. So, I'm sorry, it has grown from so they started essentially trying to repopulate these things, and they had 44 individuals in 2011, and now they have over 200 today. And this is in Tasmania, though. But they reintroduced a bunch into Australia. So the ARC is planning on two further reintroductions of 20 devils each, which will also reintroduce into the cornerstone species, the wildlife sanctuary, as part of the plan to rewild the environment. So I just thought that was really cool. And I just thought it was funny that me, as a scientist reading this paper, didn't even notice that it was Thor. Chris Hemsworth doing all this stuff. You know, I'm not really looking at the picture of the dude opening up the cage of the Tasmanian devil, but yeah, there he was. So pretty cool. You know, if you can take any positives away from 2020, hopefully it's this. Again, not much to do with geology, but
You can think about it from the environmental point of view.
Yeah, environmental point of view, and the fact that the Tasmanian devils were both on Australia and Tasmania, but because Tasmania is kind of isolated, they were able to survive essentially invasive species, because they're hypothesizing that it was all the invasive species in Australia that essentially drove them to extinction in Australia. So now that everything burned, they can reintroduce what was there, you know.
Burn it down and start all over again.
I guess.
They're literally pressing the reset button. Yeah.
I guess. I mean, again, it's awful, but if you have to find a silver lining, maybe this is it. So I just think of that Simpsons episode where Bart brings a frog to Australia. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The U.S. Embassy is the toilet that spins the other direction.
Yeah, it's got all the bumps on it.
Yeah.
I thought when you were saying they were after 3,000 years, I was like, oh, this doesn't sound good. I thought you were going to briefly talk about, did you see they found 59 mummies today?
Oh, I saw the headline. I didn't look into it.
There's a video of them opening the one sarcophagus that hasn't been opened in 2600 years. I was like, is this the year to be doing it? Should we be
right?
Mummies 2020. But yeah, it's actually really cool. You should look at the video.
Where in Egypt somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere in Egypt.
Holy cow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not much of a superstitious man, but I'm right there with you. Like, come on.
Give it a moment.
What was the thing with King Tut, the guy that discovered King, or like took
Tutankhamun?
Yeah, King Tut's tomb or something like that. He died, and did he die of malaria or something, or like, was he the one shaving? He got infected. He cut himself shaving.
Yeah. Who? What was his name?
I'm sure it was Sir Walter or somebody or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Howard Carter.
He wasn't a sir?
Maybe he didn't have time.
Yeah. I guess they don't do that posthumously.
Maybe he was one of the people there.
But, yeah. Anyway, I've seen the Mummy movies. I haven't seen the last one with Tom Cruise.
He was doing the work for Lord Carnarvon, who was paying him to.
So Lord Carnarvon was like, I know what's going to happen with this thing.
But he lived like years after. It was.
Oh, did
he? A lot of people died around it. But if you start actually, like any good conspiracy theory, if you looked beyond the surface, you'd realize, yes, this is.
And chances are it was probably hard, dirty, deadly work to begin with.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. So that was my uplifting. You know, the world is burning, but we're gonna reintroduce things to the wild, and it's gonna save our species, or at least their species. So. Yeah. You know. There we go. And. Now I know my wife pays attention to Chris Hemsworth and what he does. So
I think that I think that pretty much wraps it up for the news stories for today, for this week.
Excellente. Oh, I want to tease a little bit real quick.
Ooh, okay.
There were some earthquake swarms this week in California or Utah. Yes,
California.
I think it was in California. Yeah. So we're going to try to get our good friend of the show, Kelly Blake, back on.
So she doesn't know this yet.
No. No. I hope she subscribes, or at least, you know, if her mom's listening, I hope her mom tells her first. We're going to try to get Kelly Blake back on to try to explain it all to us. What is an earthquake swarm? And should we be worried about it?
Is it going to lead to the big one?
Exactly. I wish I knew. But anyway, so thanks again for listening. Thanks again, especially to the Formatting Formula for sponsoring us. We really appreciate it. Thank you to all our Patreon listeners. We have 3 listening right now live as we're recording. We always love our Patreons. They help keep the lights on, so to speak. Seminac just got a whole host of new stickers.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to start
a whole new supply of stickers. So
we're going to start tagging Georgia all over the place.
We owe some people some stickers, but
we do. We do. If we owe you stickers,
I got them. I got the addresses. Don't worry.
I was going to say, let me know on Facebook or via website.
I got the list. It's just sorry about the delay in stickers. We actually, it was a good problem. We ran out of stickers. We've been getting so many out. I realized when I was compiling the list to send out for the rock contest that we had a little while ago, I was like, I don't have enough stickers. So, we got new stickers, new supply in, so we'll be getting all the people that are owed stickers. We didn't forget about you guys.
No, but I think we need a new contest. Yeah. We gotta start brainstorming here. I think we need another one.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we'll think about it.
I got nothing right now, but something will come up. The last one came up very organically. That was just kind of like
show us a picture of your favorite rock.
Yeah.
A lot of people have favorite rocks out there, we learned.
Right, so you can check us out on all of the social media things.
Facebook, Twitter.
You sound so excited about
our website.
The social media things. The
plague.
GeologyFlannelCast.com. We're on it's patreon.com/GeologyFlannelCast if you want to help us out with some equipment and things along those lines.
Yeah, Chris got his new microphone cord. He doesn't sound like he's a gamer anymore.
Yeah, it works great. So I'm happy it wasn't the microphone that went, but you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I'll deal with having to replace the microphone cable. That's not that big of a deal. So if you can, we have some Patreon plans to start as little as $2 a month. So if you have a couple extra dollars handy and you like the podcast and you like to help us out, greatly appreciated. But you don't have to give us any money. You can just tell a friend and just,
Yes. Just tell an acquaintance October.
Tell them like, you know, you listen to this really cool geology podcast and you learn a lot of cool stuff and they're not scared to go out of their comfort zone. Steve was talking about biology today. I got a little nervous, but Steve was just like, here we go.
And
I don't think we had one 80s or 90s movie reference today.
No, well, I guess. Yeah, no, you did. What did you, you said something in the beginning.
Yeah, there was
I forget.
We talked about Amblin Entertainment, but
yeah, we should. We talked about Jurassic Park. That's a '90s movie.
Yeah, I guess
we gotta stop talking about that movie. I'm sick of that movie now. We did
We should mention
it every week. We did that. We watched the whole movie as a podcast. Gave our commentary.
Every topic this month, we should do something out of our comfort zone. So it's over the top October.
Ooh, I like it.
Make it, or we just get crazy.
I like
That's what I'm known for.
Yeah, Jesse's Corner. Our alternative name for that was Crazy Corner.
Once we stop pressing this recording button, it's a brand new Jesse. It's just he's in character right now.
I should you know, one thing, you know, we talk about where to find us. We post if you know, find obviously you're listening to us somehow wherever you get your podcast. We also post these on YouTube, and you can watch us. I'm just here sharpening a knife for an hour.
It's really very intimidating. Yeah. Slash soothing for some reason. I don't know. But yeah, check us out on YouTube. I put on some of my favorite t-shirts for this thing. Pretty soon, though, it's going to be flannel wear. I try to always wear a flannel cast t-shirt, but this week it's bodgy.
Maybe we'll do a favorite flannel. Take a selfie with your favorite flannel as a contest.
Ooh.
Well, we'll give it a few weeks till it gets a little chillier.
Yeah, but that's not a bad idea.
Mold out.
Take a picture of your favorite rock in front of your favorite flannel or something.
Put your favorite flannel on your favorite rock.
Ooh, I like it. Anyway.
I guess 7X just not chiming in at all.
No.
I'm contemplating how we can get out of this.
I have nothing to add to this contest. I don't know.
But if you really want to know what Jesse is like after the podcast, one of the tiers of Patreon is we record some little bit of extra stuff. So if you really want to find out what Jesse does with that sharpened knife, please, you know.
The filter is off, no holds bars.
Yep. Hook us up.
You can hang out with us before and after each episode too. Yeah. And ask any question you want. Jesse has all the answers.
Yeah.
You made your personal geologist to stump.
Speak with confidence.
Very good.
All right. What did the tree say to the lumberjack? I'm stumped.
Oh. On that note.
Thanks
for listening, everybody. And we will see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening. Bye.